Parnell, myself, Larson. And therefore, we need two more for a quorum. Chairman McLean, if we need her, is available, but she's working on the capital budget with the other body at this time. We'll take up the bills in the following order today. First will be House Bill 113. And we have Mr. Jim Forbes on teleconference for that. Then we'll take up House Bill 137. And then House Bill 109. And then we'll go on teleconference to take testimony on House Bill 67. So as soon as we get our quorum, we will start. And we have Representative Dog.
Could you repeat the order, Mr. Chairman? I'm
sorry. Here, I got it right.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Richard.
113, 137, 109, and 67. And we have our quorum.
Thanks.
Representative Hanley is here. The first bill then is committee substitute for House Bill 113, Judiciary. It's an act regulating the solicitation of contributions by charitable organizations and paid solicitors and solicitation of sales by telephonic means and amends Alaska Civil Rules of Civil Procedure 79 and 82. House Bill 113 passed out of the Labor and Commerce with 5 due pass, and out of Judiciary with 5 due pass and 1 new rec. Jim Forbes, who has been working with our office very closely on this piece of legislation, is on teleconference, and he will be able to answer any questions and explain the details in the bill. And also Margot Knut, from the Criminal Division of the AG's office, is also here with us this morning. And with that brief introduction then, I would like to call on Mr. Jim Forbes for a brief explanation and then any questions that anyone may have. Mr. Forbes, can you hear me this morning?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, loud and clear.
Okay, we now have Representative Grusendorf and Representative Martin here also. So, Jim, could you give us a brief summary?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. This bill is an attempt to address two types of fraud that have become very prevalent, if not rampant, within the last couple of years in Alaska. Those types of fraud are typically perpetrated over the telephone at some point or in some means. And so the bill addresses both of those types of fraud in the same bill, and they are charitable solicitation fraud and telemarketing fraud. First, briefly on charitable solicitation fraud. It's been our experience in the last couple of years that there are a number of people out there who are soliciting money from members of the public on behalf of organizations that they describe as charities, but which in fact don't do any charitable work whatsoever. We've found that that these people are more and more willing to call across state lines into Alaska, and in fact some of them have set up shops or have hired agents within Alaska to call people on the telephone, solicit money on behalf of what they describe as charitable operations, and then just keep the money for their own personal use without doing any charitable work of any type. These organizations typically work on a sound-alike basis where they describe their activities or their name as something that's familiar in the public's mind. We've run across an organization called the Chosen Children's Foundation, for example, which purports to grant the dying wish of a terminally ill child. And, of course, that's sort of piggybacking on the success of an organization called Make-A-Wish, I think is the name of a legitimate charity that does that kind of work. Well, the Chosen Children's Foundation says that they do that kind of work, but they don't. And they've raised tens of thousands of dollars from Alaskans in the last couple of years. There are several other examples of the same type, but I'll just give you that one to give you the idea. The bill addresses that problem by requiring registration of charitable solicitors. It provides penalties for those who fail to register, and penalties already exist for those who might register but supply incorrect information. It's our belief that the people who are perpetrating this kind of fraud don't have very much fear or respect for the civil justice system, but they would probably avoid crossing the line into criminal misconduct. And so this bill provides a criminal penalty, a misdemeanor, for anyone who violates it. In addition, the bill carries provisions that require the charitable fundraisers to disclose relevant information on request. They're required to maintain records that show how much of the money actually goes to the charity and how much of the money actually goes to them as fundraisers. And it's also significant because of the exemptions that are contained within the bill. Churches are exempt, political candidates are exempt, organizations collecting less than $5,000 per year are exempt, and charitable gaming, which is already regulated under other laws, is exempt as well. That portion of the bill has received endorsements from a number of important organizations, the National Society of Fundraising Executives, the American Cancer Society, and several others that come to mind. On to the telemarketing side, this is a problem that has become particularly pernicious just recently. You may have heard about the FBI arresting somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 people in the last couple of weeks on telemarketing fraud. That it's good that the feds are finally getting involved to some extent, but of course what they're doing is just rounding up the bad guys after the crime is committed. What we need in Alaska is a strong deterrent for that kind of activity in the first place, because as is always the case, you can't catch everybody who's already committed the crime. But if you have a strong deterrent, and if you have a law in place that discourages this kind of fraud from being committed, then perhaps you won't need to worry about rounding them up after the fact. The kind of fraud that we're specifically concerned about are the prize promotions, the kind of promotion that people either get a postcard in the mail or they get a telephone call without getting anything in advance saying, congratulations, you've won a fabulous new prize. And then they give a list of prizes. It invariably includes a new car, a large cashier's check of some kind, and a few other items. The caller then goes on to describe how all you have to do to get your new car is to buy $500 or $600 or $700 worth of skincare products or home cleaning products or some other kind of product, and your car will be on the way. Well, of course, the victim pays the $500 or $600 and never receives the car. There is currently no effective way of dealing with that kind of fraud. If you go after these guys in civil court, they just sort of laugh it off, and if they think you're really serious, then maybe they'll pay off the claim that you're dealing with. But they know, and they've got a lot of experience in determining that really only about 1 out of 10 or so people who are ripped off on scams like this ever actually...
Jim?
Yes?
We're going to have to interrupt you a little bit here. You're going into much more detail than the committee wishes at this time.
Okay. I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I think I've gotten the gist of this across. I'll be happy to take any questions.
Sure. And we do have some. Chairman McLean?
Thank you very much. I do have several questions. One, I like the concept very much because of the telephonic marketing that is going on through the state of Alaska from lower 48 states. And so you feel the impact in the rural areas where they're being solicited for prizes. But so the concept there is very good. I do have some questions on page 2, lines 1 through 4. I wanted to know what it really meant when you have to register, a person shall file with the department an irrevocable consent appointing the department the person's agent for the receipt of services of process in a court action or other proceeding against the person or the successor in interest of the person for a violation of this chapter. What does that mean?
What that means is that if if you're dealing with someone who's outside of the state of Alaska, then typically you're going to have trouble getting that person served with court papers. In the case where you're unable to get the court papers served through traditional means, you're going to be able to just serve the Department of Law, and the Department of Law is deemed to be the agent of that person for receiving those papers. And so you can get your lawsuit going without, in other words, they can't stop you from suing them just by ducking and hiding, which is a typical practice with out-of-state fraudulent scam artists.
Okay, the other question that I had is that within the rural areas, usually people will sell their handiworks through the telephone. Now, are they exempted, or what is the process within this bill?
You mean individual artists and people of that sort?
Mm-hmm.
Are you referring to craftspeople and so forth?
Yes, I am.
Well, under this bill, if they are selling it telephonically, and if they're selling it on the same terms, in other words, they have to be engaged in what we call a telephonic sales campaign, a solicitation campaign, which is on page 1, lines 12, 13, and 14. In other words, the campaign is defined as making the same offer to two or more people. Then in fact, they would be required to register under this bill. But I would point out that there's no fee required for registration. It's not going to be a particularly onerous requirement.
Well, Jim, can you imagine every other elder who does their arts and crafts and they sell, they say that they have a new pair of mittens for them to try and register, I think that it would create a lot of problems. Most of the elders really do, in order to implement their income, sell their arts and crafts, and if they have made a new pair of mittens or they have made a new parka, they'll call somebody, and that is solicitation in a sense, but yet it isn't.
Okay, I think there's another exemption that deals with it. If you're describing a situation where the actual sale of the product is going to be completed at a later face-to-face meeting between the buyer and the seller, then that activity is not covered by the statute or by the bill.
Then they would be exempted under that?
Yes, if they have a face-to-face meeting after their telephone contact, then they're exempt under this bill.
Now, about the small businesses, again, would the small industries, cottage industries, would they have to register in order to sell their products?
Only if they conduct their business exclusively by telephone without any kind of a face-to-face meeting later on to conclude the sale, and the goods are just sent to the person by mail with the check coming by return mail or something like that. They would be required to register under those circumstances. But if they make the solicitation for the sale by telephone and then conclude the sale at a later time in person, then they're not required to register.
Within the Judiciary Committee, apparently there was a lot of discussion on the public radio stations doing fundraising, and could you give us some information as to their discussions? Because I do have an amendment to include them. And the reason for that is like KOTZ, KBRW, they do membership drives, but they're not exempted under this bill. There are areas, real estate broker, a security, a contractor, those are exempted, but yet a public radio station or broadcasting service is not. Could you explain the reason for that?
Well, you're correct that they're not specifically exempted. The rationale there is that they are in fact doing fundraising and that they should register. But I would point out under this bill that is really the only additional requirement that they're going to have to comply with is the registration. and then there are a couple of disclosure requirements, but they can deal with the disclosure requirements very easily. It's my experience anyway when I give to public radio or public television that my phone call is followed up with some kind of a pledge document where they send me something in writing. It's either a receipt or if I've just pledged to give money in the future, then they send me something reminding me that I've done that. They can comply with all the disclosure requirements simply by disclosing the necessary information on that document. And so the only two things that they would have to do that they don't have to do now is they would have to file a registration form, which we intend to make that very simple for local charities. We'll adopt some regulations that hopefully relieve them of any significant burden under this. And the only other thing the bill would require them to do is just put some additional language perhaps on their follow-up confirmation document that complies with the disclosure parts of this bill. But when we talked to the National Society of Fundraising Executives and the Society of Nonprofit Organizations, it was our belief that they didn't view the requirements under this bill as particularly onerous.
Thank you very much, Jim. One last question that I had on page 10. Lines 22 and 23, a charitable organization that does not intend to raise or receive contributions excluding government grants in excess of $5,000 during a fiscal year of the charitable organization. One of the questions that I have is, does if they raise over the $5,000 mark, does that automatically put them into a non-exempt category?
Yes, if they exceed the $5,000, in other words, if they do better than they expected to do that year, then there's a provision in here for them to file a registration document after they've exceeded the $5,000.
Sure.
And again, they wouldn't be under any additional requirement other than just to file the registration.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, we had Representative Martin and Foster and then Brown.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, one of the concerns I have here is a group that is not mentioned. Have you talked about the nonprofit organization, those that guide themselves?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I can't hear the representative. Oh. It's breaking up.
Okay, there we are.
Breaking up in more than one way. One of the major problems I've had around this state that developing is not charitable organizations, the true ones that have to have an IRS license. And I notice we don't say that here. Why don't we require those people that disguise themselves as being charitable on a national basis, a state basis, to have an IRS license. And number two, there's a big loophole in groups that call themselves nonprofit. Profit's a dirty word. You shouldn't do that in America nowadays. So we're nonprofit and we live off charity and we live off grants, but we're not charitable organizations either. Is there a loophole there that you see or what?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's a loophole in that regard. The definition that applies to them has to do with just what it is that they're raising the money for. And as long as they're raising the money for a charitable purpose, then assuming they're not exempt somewhere else, then they are required to register whether they're a nonprofit corporation or not. But in other words, the requirement to register doesn't turn on whether they file as a nonprofit corporation or under some other format. And if I understand your question correctly, this bill covers anybody that's engaged in charitable fundraising, regardless of the format under which they create the organization.
So they have to have the IRS designation. And I see on page 11, Mr. Hanley pointed out that organization, charitable organization, means nonprofit, although the word is greatly misused nowadays. But if they have an IRS in the first place, do they have any, were they prohibited from telephoning or soliciting or anything? Aren't they nationwide?
It's not my understanding that if they're a 501c3 corporation that they're precluded from soliciting. There may be some other regulation, though, that you could point to, but I'm not frankly aware of any other regulation of that type.
Okay, you're making the Department of Law responsible for registering these people, and all they have to say is that we have an IRS permit. And from that point, what?
Well, from that point, they're registered, and assuming that there's nothing else wrong with their registration, then they would be permitted to go about fundraising.
Hey, Representative, are you through, Representative Martin? Representative Foster?
Yeah, real briefly, I've got the little tannery up in Shishmaref, and then most of my little village native stores sell ivory through advertisements and things like the Alaska Magazine and whatever. But they wouldn't be covered under this piece of legislation, would they? In other words, they'd be placing an ad in a paper, and then people would be calling them from Anchorage and ordering things, even though they're not soliciting by phone, they're doing all their business by phone.
Well, if the call is made in response to an advertisement, then they would be included. However, if their advertisement qualifies as a, I'm looking for the exemption here. There's an exemption for mail order. Well, see, that's for mail order catalogs published. If they publish their advertisement, I would suppose on a regular periodic basis, and it's described in pictures or words the items for sale, and it prominently provides a specific price, then they'd be exempt under that criteria.
Yeah, you know, I could see the intent of this legislation. You know, earlier when you were talking about the people calling up and soliciting for money, and they're obviously not coming through. But, you know, as it applies here to the innocent, small, common people of Arctic and Western Alaska, the people up there wouldn't comply because they wouldn't know about this regulation. And certainly they're innocent and they're not doing anything intentionally illegal. It'd be hard for me to support something like this unless there was some kind of a provision in there to cover them.
Representative Brown?
My question was answered. I'll pass.
Okay, are there any more questions? Okay, what does the committee wish in relation to committee substitute for House Bill 113? Okay, Representative Brown?
I wonder if we could put this bill into a subcommittee briefly for the purpose of developing an amendment that would cover the small handicrafts or the concerns Representative Foster just raised. Because it seems like we've made a list here and we've exempted everybody under the sun, from the cable TV to the insurance salesman to everybody else, and that if we're going to, you know, we're trying to, it seems like the concept is to develop a list of the legitimate people and say, you don't have to register, and that we ought to take another day and work on that amendment.
Further discussion, Representative McLean?
Wait, let me just look through page 5. I think it could be a good one. Now, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I do have one other question, and again, going back to the arts and crafts people. Let's say that there are two individuals that are visiting, and they have the arts and crafts there in the home, and they're face to face, and they do a transaction. Now, would they have to register?
No. Under those circumstances, they would absolutely not have to register.
Okay, on page 5, Jim, were you talking about if a person calls and is soliciting by phone for arts and crafts, let's say on page 5, lines 22 through 26, would that address that concern?
Well, I believe it would. My reading of Exemption 17, which is what I believe you're referring to, mm-hmm. is that any time the sale is completed face-to-face and the buyer and the seller are together, in face-to-face contact, then that is exempt under this bill.
Okay. I think it does address the arts and crafts if they are going through the telephonic conversation issue.
They can discuss the sale. This came up in another committee when a representative asked, well, what if I advertise my used car in the newspaper? and I get several telephone calls, wouldn't that put me under the bill? And the answer is no, it wouldn't. It doesn't matter if the sale is initially discussed by telephone, so long as the sale is concluded at a later time after some kind of face-to-face meeting, then it would be exempt under this bill.
Representative Brown?
Right. It seems like the example Representative Foster gave was of would not result in a face-to-face meeting because people, you know, in Alaska are placing ads or Lower 48 or who knows where, and that the business is conducted over the phone, but there's never this face-to-face meeting. But that it seems like we could either amend number 13 or make a new amendment that dealt with residents of the state of Alaska.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, there are definitely some things that could be discussed along those lines. I would point out we need to be careful about a blanket exemption for residents of the state of Alaska that might run into federal constitutional problems. But otherwise, there may be some room to discuss that kind of clarification.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative McLean, then Grusendorf.
Jim, under that same exemption, under 17, could it be easier to put the value of the limit, let's say, to $2,500? If the sale is being conducted, could we put a limit on the value of the sale? I think maybe that could address it.
That could be done. You need to keep in mind that the people that we're having the worst fraud problems with are typically asking for, you know, for money in the neighborhood of $300 to $500, so somewhere between $300 and $700, it usually seems like. So the problem is if you put that kind of a limit on it, then you really don't take care of the fraud problem that we've got currently. If you're going to talk in terms of a monetary limit, I would think $50 would be about the maximum you could hope to put on it.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that I'm aware of that in the rural areas, people in the arts and crafts or even specialists in anything like smoked salmon, they work through outlets. In other words, they contact somebody in Anchorage or in Fairbanks or a larger city in the state of Alaska, and these outlets, of course, are going to take it and sell it. So maybe we're looking at something like resale, that we're an artist or craftsperson has outlets that they call and say, hey, I have now five sets of fur mittens, or I have X number of pieces of work, or X number of specially. Could we work something out that in the bill like that, where we talk about resale, where the next step would be resale beyond the call?
Mr. Chairman, my concern there would be that the fraudulent operators would just all of a sudden claim that they were involved in resale too. So if an exemption like that were created, I would think that it would create a loophole.
Further discussion? The only concern that I can see is the one that was expressed by Representative Foster. Is there a solution? I do not want to weaken this bill in any way. I want to make sure we have some consumer protection. But yet, if there's a way to address the concern that was brought up by Representative McLean in regards to public radio and public television soliciting for contributions, or Representative Foster's concern. I was wondering if Margot Knuth has any comments you'd like to make in regards to the conversation.
Mr. Chairman, at this point, I have not thought of a way that would address that problem.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hoffman.
Jim, could the exclusion be to Alaskan handicrafts that are made, because those have to be, there's a statute that allows for the recognition of Alaskan handicrafts and can made by Alaskan natives. Can that be used as an exemption?
You know, Mr. Chairman, as the representative was describing that, I have Jerry Williams in my office right now, who's our a consumer protection investigator, and that's exactly what he was proposing. That may very well be a way to draft such an exclusion that if you're registered or certified as an Alaska Native Arts and Crafts person, I'm not familiar with the exact language, but that may well be a good way to do that without creating a loophole for the bad guy.
Representative Gusendorf.
Yeah, thank you. Another question here: that are you saying now by this proposed piece of legislation that if somebody in the state of Alaska that's making, oh, let's say, knives, not necessarily connected with the any particular group, but he's making knives or some particular thing, and he puts an ad in the Alaska magazine or something of that nature, and people then send their orders in or call him, that this person would have to register?
Without knowing any more about the business operation, as long as there's a telephonic conversation back and forth, then yes, registration would be required. But I should point out that the registration that we're talking about is not, again, it's not particularly onerous. It's just going to be a requirement that you fill out a form that we prepare pursuant to the statute or to the bill. And mail it in. There's no money involved in doing it.
Well, at this point, I feel that the bill is unworkable. You're requiring everybody that advertises for anything to go through the paper mill. I don't know how in the world whoever's going to sort this out. I can't see enforcement. I suppose on rare cases, you may find a situation where somebody didn't send one in, you go after them, but this bill needs work.
Any response, Mr. Forbes?
Well, to say that if the person is in the business, even if it's a hobby, but if they're in the business of making a substantial number of sales, it would just seem to me that filling out a form and sending it in is not a particularly onerous requirement.
Kevin McLean.
Jim, I doubt that you have been to rural Alaska. The arts and crafts people that I'm primarily talking about are primarily elderly people that do natural handiwork. And they're not registered, they're not salespeople, but they do sell their products. And I'll give you an example. Okay, my mother will call to Wainwright, to another elder. She will say, I've got this parka, do you want to buy it? And she describes it. And then this lady, her handicraft will be beadwork. So she will say, I've got these beadworks, and do you want to buy them? And this is the amount. And so they handle that transaction through the telephone. They don't see each other. They send their products to each other. But yet they're not registered nor certified. They're just people doing their handicrafts. And this is very common throughout rural Alaska. And so this is the concern that I have. Most of those people do not really understand state laws, nor are they well-versed in signing documents. And this one would fall through the loops with the people.
Well, Mr. Chairman, all I can say there is that it sounds as if many of those transactions would not be covered by this bill. First off, it only applies if you're making the same offer to two or more people, which would, I think, require that there be some dollar amount associated with the sale, and that you call up several people until somebody agrees to that dollar amount. If you're talking about a barter exchange or something of that sort, that would not be covered under the definition of a sales campaign or a solicitation campaign. But I do understand the problem. It's certainly not the intent of this legislation to put any new or burdensome requirements on people of the type that Representative McLean just described. On the other hand, if you're dealing with people who are more or less in business and producing products for sale to the public and making numerous calls to sell an item at a given price, then it would seem to me registration might not be too burdensome. On the other hand, the situation that Representative McClain described is not within the intent of this bill.
Representative Lucendorf?
Hey, another question just crossed my mind. Anybody who reads any newspaper in any Alaskan town, you'll see ads in there that will say firewood for sale. They'll go through and explain the type of firewood that it is and say, please call X number, telephone number. By what I'm understanding now, I guess that would also qualify.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe it would, because those people typically don't take payments over the phone. The people that this bill is designed to get are those who say, okay, I want to sell you this item. I want you to pay me the money right now. And usually they take a credit card charge, or they send a Federal Express courier by to pick up your check right on the spot before you get the product. In the case of the firewood sale, money doesn't change hands until the firewood is delivered, and then that's a face-to-face exchange, so it's exempt. I understand the kinds of concerns that are being raised, but I think a fair reading of the bill would show that virtually all of those are exempted.
Well, then if that's exempt, how can it, the other not be, where somebody is actually, in the case of Representative Foster, where they send the fish out, is the money paid ahead of time, then you're saying?
Well, it would depend on how that sale is structured.
Well, that's what I was getting at before, for the resale aspect of it. But, well, thank you.
Senator Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say that the fiscal note of zero seems low in relation to the discussion we've just had, and I note that the estimate is this year's, or the initial filings, will not greatly exceed 250 charities and 100 telemarketers. But as we just talked about, there are many businesses that might fall under this, and of course there's several thousand businesses registered in the state of Alaska, and I think the reality is people have to use the telephone. And a lot of business is conducted by phone, and so it just seems to me that I support the concept of this. I'm just questioning whether it is a zero cost, because the setting up the filing system, trying to just deal with the paperwork and the questions and so forth, is going to have some cost, and I think it'll be greater than what the Department of Law anticipates in this fiscal note.
Mr. Forbes?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The situation right now is that we're spending a tremendous amount of time chasing people that are very elusive and very difficult to catch. And it's our prediction that under this bill, the amount of time we spend chasing people will be greatly reduced if we can spend our time instead dealing with the registration requirements. So that is the thinking behind the zero fiscal note, that we're just spinning our wheels right now, trying to catch up with people that we have very little information about, and then we have really nothing that we can do to them once we catch them. Whereas with this bill, we would have sanctions with some good teeth in it, and we'd have the registration information, so we'd spend a whole lot less time looking for these people, and we'd have more time that we could spend dealing with the file system.
Representative Foster.
Yeah, I don't understand why a bandit organization or person would bother registering in the first place. I mean, that's their business, is to get away with things. And what you'll end up with is filing cabinets full of innocent people sending you all kinds of pieces of paper on registration from every village in Alaska.
But, Mr. Chairman, the difference is that if they fail to register and they steal money from someone, then we can prosecute them for a Class C felony, just on the basis that they didn't register. And we don't have to go through the gyrations that we would currently have to go through to prove that they promised to send a prize and then they didn't send a prize, and only to find that once they're indicted, they all of a sudden send some kind of a prize and defeat the entire enforcement action. With this bill, if they do the solicitation without registering, and if they're clearly covered by the bill, then they're subject to immediate prosecution, and that's why the bad guys would either have to register or face the music for not registering. But it's certainly not our intent to go after these little organizations. It's my opinion that most of the ones that have been described here are already exempt, and the others could be
Further questions? Representative Hoffman?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would suggest that we follow up on the amendments that the amendment that I talked about and that Jim had said that that's what they were considering, and ask legal to see if they can come up with the proper language or put it into subcommittee, as Representative Brown says, so we can address it and make sure that this issue is adequately addressed to protect those people.
Well, I'm going to hold the bill for one day, and I'm not going to allow this bill to be watered down one bit. If there's fraud in rural Alaska, it's just as bad as if there's fraud in urban Alaska or in the South 48. Now, Mr. Forbes, if you can come up with an amendment that will address that, we'll move the bill forward. If we can't, we'll hold it.
I'll get right on it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Chairman, just a quick comment here. He kept referring to people who offer other enticements besides a product, such as a prize or something of that nature. Maybe that's what we got to target in on then. Anybody that goes beyond the offer, say, if you do this, we'll give you that, and that might be an aspect you can look at. Because a lot of these sales are straight back and forth.
Well, you know, there is no product.